And welcome to Days of Our Lives, Radio Verulam's show especially for the baby boom generation. I'm Pat Newland, and today I'm going to be talking to PCSO Adriano Russo about how to keep ourselves safe from crime, and to Dr. Barton of OSD Healthcare about the effects of ageing on our hearing and our vision. And a little later, I'll also be talking to local vet Kobe Shelteel of Marshallswick Vets about the best breeds of dogs and cats to keep as we get a little older, and that, of course, most suit our particular lifestyles. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome onto Days of Our Lives Mark Hanna of Age UK Hertfordshire. Well, welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Age UK is a national organisation which is there to provide information and advice to people once they've reached their older years, but also to their families. Now, what kinds of help and advice are you able to provide? Well, I know you're Age UK Hertfordshire. So what kind of things are you able to help people with?
Well, each county will have their own, or should have their own, Age UK, local Age UK, which will be a service provider. In Hertfordshire, we provide a range of different services, which one of them include information and advice. So information and advice is a helpline and an outreach service, so they go out to people's homes as well, that basically provide information and advice about people's rights and entitlements to access support. This could include the welfare benefit system. It could include accessing support from social services, what their rights and entitlements are there, the financial implications of that. It's also the information advice service is all there, also there to debunk a lot of myths surrounding access to support. So, for instance, people may not think that they can access support if they have their own money. Which is not the case. There is support available. It depends on personal circumstances, but the information advice team is there to guide people and advise them based on their individual circumstances. That's really what they do.
Because I mean, it can be quite a minefield.
Absolutely.
Particularly for once you get a bit older.
Absolutely.
Maybe, it's more difficult to follow what you can actually claim for.
And also there are changes to the system that come up.
Yes,
I mean, for instance, there's the change coming up on the 15th of May, this year, where the government have introduced a change to universal credit. Universal credit is the new encompassing benefit for people of working age, but now it's impacting people of pensionable age.
Yeah.
The change on the 15th of May includes a system change whereby if a person of pensionable age has a partner who is of working age, they are no longer able to claim pension credit. They have to claim universal credit. So which means that they will be financially worse off. So one of the functions that we provide is to try to make people aware of things like this, impending government changes.
Yeah,
we work with Age UK National to try to campaign against such decisions, and we're doing so as we speak. But it's also making people aware of impending changes so they can make the relevant applications or such like before those changes take effect. So the Information Advice Service is a very key service for us because, one, it is there to help people know what their rights and entitlements are based on their individual circumstances. Also to make people aware about changes to the system because, as you said, it's a minefield, especially welfare benefits, but also social care. Things like how residential care is funded is a huge one, how property is taken into account, how financial assessments for home care are provided and such like. So the Information Advice Service is a key service that helps people through that way. They also provide support with things like getting your affairs in order. Now, this sometimes is a difficult subject.
Because you don't always want to talk about what's going to happen to me once I've passed on.
But it's more about the impact on loved ones.
Yeah.
We have received so many cases where people haven't got their affairs in order, and the impact on the loved ones is huge, and it's upsetting because they are very much left to pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
So
getting
affairs in order is really about the legacy you leave behind, or you wish to leave behind. One of the things that we do is support people with lasting powers of attorney. So this is a legal document around who can make decisions if you lose mental capacity, so it's only really for when you're alive. That service, solicitors will charge quite a high amount for filling in the form, but it's not something only a solicitor can do.
That's interesting, because a lot of people might think, I've got to go to a solicitor for this, which is going to cost them money.
And many people don't do so because of that very fact. Yeah. So over the last number of years, we've been aware of this. The Information Advice Service has received a lot of inquiries from people saying, I want to find a solicitor. How much do they charge for lasting powers of attorney? And we explain that the market rate is X, they are then put off from doing so. But in not doing it, there is a issue, because if they do lose mental capacity and there is no legal document to say this person can make decisions for me, it has to go through a much lengthier and complex process. So one of the functions that we provide is to help people through that process. They can fill the forms in themselves, and we just advise them on that process.
Yeah, that is really, really helpful. And just while we're on that subject, and while the advice that you provide, if someone wants advice such as that, or maybe moving into a care home or anything like that, how should they get in touch with you?
Well, there's really two ways. The first way is by phone. They can ring 0300 345 3446. That's the Information Advice telephone number.
Okay.
That's open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. The other way is via our website. They can make an inquiry via our website, but also they can find more information about what we do. And the website is www.ageuk.org.uk/Hertfordshire, or by simply Googling any search engine of your choice, Googling Age UK Hearts. Just be aware that Age UK National is a separate organisation which we work with, but they're a separate organisation and so therefore have a separate website. So information on local support in Hertfordshire has to be via our webpage.
Okay, that's brilliant. Now, one of the problems that we do have as we get older, or we can have sometimes, is the feeling of loneliness. And especially if we've been left on our own, maybe through the death of a spouse, what's the advice of Age UK Hertfordshire on how to cope with loneliness?
Well, obviously, loneliness is our biggest issue with the people that we're trying to support. Loneliness can take many forms. Just being isolated doesn't mean that one is lonely. It's the absence of any meaningful connection is how we kind of really define it. We know that the impact of loneliness on physical and mental health is huge, and people will often decline if they're in a situation where they don't have any meaningful connections.
So what
we do is that we recognise this, and we recognise that people will ultimately lose social connections through their as they age. They will lose friends, they will lose family.
Yes, and if
they are in a position where they don't have any or many connections, then we need to make sure that they're supported in the community. And we do this through a number of ways. One of the ways, the most direct ways to address loneliness, is through our befriending service. The befriending service is our most established, most long-running service that we have. And it's very much about matching a volunteer that we recruit, that we have, and we match them based on personal likes, preferences, history, with a person who needs support. So we do that matching, that oversight, that support there.
Do those volunteers, do they go to the older person's home?
They do, and we have around 350 volunteers in Hertfordshire who are going out and visiting people in their homes each week to provide a weekly contact where they will have a chat, a cup of tea, spend some meaningful time with a person and get to know them. The idea is that it's a long-term service. It's as long as the person wants it for. And in one case, we've had a volunteer matched with a person in the community for over 25 years, whereby a natural friendship will develop through the support and intervention that we provide. So people will come to us or be referred to us needing support, and we will offer the support from something like the befriending service. Now, the befriending service is not just simply at a person's home. They don't just simply walk in and walk out and that's it. They will engage with the person and really spend the time well with the person. Often they will go out for a cup of tea, garden centre or a local cafe, to actually spend time with the person based on what they're feeling that they like to do.
Yeah, because actually, I mean, one of the problems with loneliness is that it kind of gets worse and worse. The less you go out, the less you want to go out. So I think if they've got someone that they know they can go out with and be safe, feel totally safe with, then they will then hopefully then maybe start going out a bit more altogether.
Absolutely. I think there's two things there. I think the longer a person is experiencing loneliness, it can affect their mental state.
Yeah.
It can affect their acceptance of support. It could spiral into depression.
Mm-hmm.
Depression is also known to be linked to cognitive impairment, i.e. dementia.
Yeah.
But also, the other thing is that it can actually impair their confidence to actually really go out and find the support. So there's on the one hand, we're trying to engage with people so they can accept our support. They recognise that they need help or are accepting of it, but also to make them aware of it so they can have the confidence to really, reach out and ask for it. Equally, with the visiting scheme, there is a telephone support service that we provide. So this is where somebody can get a weekly contact via the telephone.
Okay, that's useful as well.
So both of them hand in hand will help to alleviate loneliness for people in that position.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, people that can develop dementia. Do you have any sort of special services for those that are suffering from any kind of sort of serious mental health problem like that?
Yeah, well, all of our service will support people in that position, but we do have a service called Heartswise. Now, Heartswise is specifically for people with dementia or with mild cognitive impairment or with memory issues of some description, whether a diagnosis is pending or not sought yet. What they do is they try to change lifestyle by supporting people in groups with their carers, with their partners, or on a one-to-one basis to really get them involved with physical activity,
mm-hmm.
something fun, engaging, that stimulates cognition, keeps their brain ticking, also healthy eating, healthy lifestyle. Those factors are known to stave off the deteriorating effects of dementia.
Yeah, yeah.
So the service is really there to encourage those activities.
Now, talking about that, fortunately, there are a huge number of what we call the baby boom generation who are very healthy and active into the later years, 80s, 90s, and maybe even beyond. But a lot of people, they retire, and nowadays, sometimes people will actually work on longer. Well, we're all going to have to work on longer because of the new sort of pension arrangements, but people will choose to work on longer, and then sometimes also people might leave their normal job and maybe start a completely different, possibly part-time job, in fact, to keep themselves active and to keep them also mentally active. I mean, do you have any experience of the kinds of jobs that people are doing?
Well, I can only really speak for Aged Care Hertfordshire, and
yeah.
We have plenty of opportunities for people in that position, both from a volunteering point of view, if they wish to volunteer in the community through our number of services, or if they wish to seek paid employment. It could be on a casual basis or a part-time basis. But through the services that we have a domestic support service helping people with their shopping, with their cleaning, with their laundry, with their prescriptions, that sort of thing. That's a paid-for service that we have. We rely on that service as part of a charity. We need that kind of income generation to survive.
Yeah,
in
support some of the other services that you provide.
Absolutely. and I think most charities are in the same position.
Yep.
But equally, we have opportunities with volunteering. And as I say, we have through all of our service, whether there are lunch clubs, help in the home service, information advice service, through our hospital and community navigation service, through our Heartswise service, all of the services that we have opportunities where people who have the capacity and the time and the will can volunteer or work for us in those capacities. And we're more and more reliant on volunteers. There's no getting around that. We have currently 500 in Hertfordshire, but we
need a lot.
It may appear a lot, but if you bear in mind that there are 200,000 approximately people over 65 in Hertfordshire, all who are aging population population increasing. An interesting statistic is that the number of people aged over 100 has increased exponentially in terms of in 1952, people over 100 in the UK numbered 300. There are over 13,000 now.
Wow, it's amazing, isn't it? You don't realise. I mean, obviously, it is fantastic that we're all living longer.
But it is
putting pressure.
It has an impact, yeah. and it puts an impact on social care and overstretched, under-resourced social care sector, which equally looks to the voluntary sector to support individuals to alleviate the burden. And we are one of those organisations that they look to, and so we rely more and more on support from people in the community to help us with helping the need. And the need is going to grow. And so our needs are going to grow as well.
So if anyone listening now would like to be a volunteer, what's the best way to go about doing that?
Well, the best way to contact us if you're interested in volunteering is either to visit our website,
yep.
Age UK Hertfordshire, or to contact us by phone.
Okay.
On our website, there is a volunteer page section where they can make an online inquiry.
Oh, right, that's useful.
And they can find out more information about our roles there. And it's really about seeing what fits right for them. Because one of the things that we want to do is we want volunteers to be with us for a long time.
Yes, and obviously, depending on their particular experience, there might be a particular role that would be very helpful to your service.
Absolutely. We recognise that there's a wealth of experience there that is ready to be tapped into,
and we could
utilise it very effectively. So it would be mutually beneficial for us in terms of having extra resource to help the need out there, but also very rewarding for the person, for the individual volunteering, using their expertise in the right way. And it also helps us as an organisation in terms of the assets that we have. So absolutely, we're very interested in receiving inquiries from people who are interested.
Well, that's great. And thanks ever so much for coming on today, Mark, and telling us about all the amazing services that Age UK Hertfordshire is offering people. It's a fantastic service and lots of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, coming up next, PCSO Adriana Russo will be joining me to tell us how to keep ourselves safe, particularly when we're out and about. And Dr. Barton will be here to talk about how to look after our hearing and our eyesight as we get that little bit older. So stay tuned to 92.6 FM, Radio Verulam. We're all very lucky here in St Albans because we enjoy living in what is a very safe city, but that doesn't mean that we should forget about our personal safety. So I'm pleased to welcome back PCSO Adriana Russo. And welcome to the show again, Adriana.
Good to see you.
Now, I think today we're going to be looking at how we keep ourselves, well, and our belongings, safe when we're out and about.
Yeah.
And that's either obviously shopping or maybe even travelling somewhere. Now, I have noticed that there does seem to be a spate of pickpocketing and theft of handbags. And I have to say that, about 4 weeks ago now, I was actually the victim. I don't like to use that word.
No, you're a victim.
But I was a victim of having my cards, all my cards in my wallet, stolen from my handbag when I was in a supermarket.
Yeah.
And it was my own fault because I think I'd opened my handbag, unzipped it. The cards were probably in view at the top of the handbag. And, of course, when I got to the checkout, the whole wallet had gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it probably happened when I was, because when you're in a supermarket, lots of things you take very quickly, don't you? You take your kind of beans off the shelf really quickly. But when you're buying vegetables or fruit, you're probably going to look at them and think, I don't like that one, whatever. And that is when it happened. And we know actually from the time on the CCTV that actually that was a time that he actually stole from my handbag.
Yeah. Was your handbag in the child seat on the trolley?
And in this case, it could have been, but actually it wasn't because I actually, I've got a big trolley. This is one of the smaller ones, the ones that are shallower.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, of course, that meant that the handbag was actually higher up.
Yes.
It was easier for him to get, so I was an absolute target.
And was the card used at all afterwards?
Yeah, it was. The first thing I did, of course, was to phone the banks.
Yeah.
And had all my cards stopped. And I didn't ask them. I said, has my card been used? Now, it's interesting, this, everyone, I'm sure you know this better than I do, but the cards that they target are the contactless cards.
Because you spend £30 at a time without using the PIN.
Yeah, and that's what they targeted. And the first, and I found out exactly where this thief,
theft,
had actually used my cards, how much he'd spent, what time you spent it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I then, being the sort of my middle name, you know, isn't Sherlock for nothing, I then went round the shops, having told the police, of course, I'd already reported to the police.
Because great lines of inquiry, because a lot of these places have CCTV, so we can identify
them. And one of them
are.
Did.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, one of the shops that he went to, they had CCTV, apart from the supermarket, of course, who did, and they actually have caught him. And he will be prosecuted.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You've done my job for me today.
Yeah.
No, fantastic. Honestly, these are such common crimes.
Yeah,
when we talk about personal safety, you are very unlikely in St Albans to have any physical damage done to you. You're not likely to be mugged, beaten up.
Yeah.
It just it doesn't really happen. I mean, it clearly does happen, but you know, it's a very, very rare crime. You're unlikely to be walking down the street after you've been to the Auburn Arena or wherever it might be at 11 o'clock and be pounced on by somebody who's going to, you know, pummel you. It just doesn't happen, particularly people our age, a little bit older. Any physical assaults, robbery, mugging, as we call it, tends to be school kids. So it tends to be, you know, kids coming back from school. And again, this is why we've had all the worry recently, the news about knife crime, etc. We've had Operation Scepter, we've had knife amnesty in the early part of March in the county. So as an older person, you're probably just not likely to mix with those kind of people who kind of know each other. There's a bit of beef between kids. So let me put that one out there first of all. What you are more likely to do is be the victim of a theft, such as you were. So people who target people.
Yep.
We've had particularly Waitrose in Harpenden. I think Berkhamsted as well. We've had a gang that's targeted, particularly those ones, probably because they think people have got more money there.
Yeah, because they're going to be slightly more expensive sometimes, produce.
And as you say, targeting those contactless cards, you don't need the PIN number. I think you can make 6 transactions before it asks you a PIN number.
Yep.
So quick, bang, 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 they can quickly take the money out. They tend to buy lottery cards, cigarettes, alcohol, whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I think that there was a limit to how much they can use it.
Yeah.
And I think, it's about 150, £180.
Have interest. Did you get the money back from the bank or not?
I did, straight away,
So that was really good of them to do that because...
Yep.
I mean, you could argue, were you not looking after your card properly? I don't know, but that's this discussion for them. So it's really good that you know that if you are slightly older, maybe money is tight, you will get that money refunded. The thing I always say to people as well, look, contactless cards are a part of our everyday life now, but don't keep every single penny of your savings in those accounts.
No, and don't actually, the other thing that I do, or don't do now, actually, Adriano, is actually to carry like all my cards.
No.
You know, I've got that many, but I may have 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But now I actually only go out with one card.
Yeah.
Actually, so if I am unfortunate enough to be a victim of crime again, there's only one card that they can get hold of.
Mm. I mean, with those debit cards, if you've got a credit card, why do you kind of need the debit card? Because I'd prefer to charge it to the card and pay at the end of the month, which is what I do.
But
even my bill.
My credit card wasn't used. It was my debit card because that was the contactless. But the new. Because I had to have all my cards replaced.
Yeah.
So the new credit card that I was sent actually is a contactless credit card, which
but
actually
then that's
I don't
their
want.
Money at the end of the day, isn't it? It's on credit, so I don't know if the rules are slightly different.
But
your cards. The other thing to be aware of course, if you're slightly older, and I don't mean to patronise people at all, always use the cash point in the bank. The CCTV tends to be better. They tend to be staffed there as well. What we've had is distraction techniques in the past where you're taking money outside of the cash point. Somebody might distract you, normally a gang of 2 or 3 people. They've seen you put your PIN number in. They'll press the cancel button, which will quickly fire out the return the card. That card is then passed on to someone else. They'll quickly use your PIN number and they'll absolutely rinse out the whole of your account very quickly. That's why I'm saying do not keep all your savings in that one account.
Yes,
maybe put some into a savings account that you know you have to transfer the money in the bank. I've seen people before have got like, I've got £25,000, my life savings, in this current account.
Yeah.
Well, if I get hold of your card, I can probably take out £2,000, £3,000, £4,000 in a day. You know, it's silly. Separate your money.
That's another very good piece of advice. That.
Have a little bit of a float of cash separately.
Now, even in very, really safe cities like St Albans, we can be vulnerable just walking around, particularly at night. And maybe, you know, if we've had a bit to drink, be more vulnerable then? So what is the sort of police advice about going
out at night? I think what you'd be more vulnerable to is maybe just a bit of verbal harassment, maybe someone else who's come back being a bit loud, leery.
Yeah.
As I say, a physical attack is probably a rarity. If you're, you know, if you're coming back late-ish, I don't know what people consider late now. Years ago it was when the pubs chucked out, wasn't it? 11 o'clock started to be late.
Yeah.
Now it goes on a little bit later still. Yes, let's be honest, there are people who come into our city from elsewhere and they'll be out on the street till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't say it's unsafe to walk on the streets, because I'm more than happy to do it, my wife would, but I'd get a taxi. You know, at the end of the day, I know a lot of the street lights are turned off on some streets as well. So physically negotiating the streets.
Or even if they're particularly quiet streets, I think sometimes exactly. You know, you're a little bit more vulnerable.
It can be a bit unnerving as well. But as I say, I'm not aware of any criminality where people are sitting there waiting to pounce on you. But just for safety's sake, get a taxi. I would use one of the reputable ones. I know people use Uber and such like nowadays. You've got the licence number of the person who's there. You get safely taken home. It just makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you once again, Adriana. Great advice.
Stay safe.
Now, we baby boomers are very fortunate to be getting that little bit older at a time when advances in medicine and healthcare have provided us with so many amazing treatments for a number of what would be painful or even life-threatening conditions. And whilst it isn't possible to halt that inevitable ageing process, a huge amount can be done to help restore the quality of, say, our hearing and our eyesight. And Dr. Barton of OSD Healthcare is with me today to talk about how we can hear and see better as we get older. And good to see you again, Dr. Barton.
Hello.
Now, I know today you want to talk about hearing loss and eyesight issues, which, of course, do affect the older generation, probably more than younger people. And if we take hearing loss first, what are the sort of common signs that we may be developing a hearing problem? Obviously, the obvious one that we can't hear as well, but I mean, there are other indications possibly that we are developing a hearing problem.
Absolutely. Hearing loss, when it's gradual and progressive and it's affecting one or both of your ears, can be really subtle, and actually the person experiencing it might not necessarily notice. What external observers might notice is that that person is listening to the radio very loudly, watching the television very loudly, or is constantly saying pardon or excuse me when you're having a conversation with them. Patients themselves will often describe finding it difficult to hear people having a conversation, particularly if there's a busy, noisy environment, and are finding themselves having to concentrate very hard on hearing, which can then, you know, mean that they sort of become quite socially isolated, actually, and that can often be one of the first sort of things that people notice.
Yes, I mean, it's sort of the ambient noise, isn't it, if you're in a busy restaurant or busy pub. Now, is there anything in particular is causing hearing loss? And was there anything we can do to help protect our ears?
Yes, so unfortunately, our ears do just get a little bit more tired with time. So as we get older, there's a process of change within all the apparatus of the ear that can lead to a condition called presbyacusis, which is essentially, you know, hearing loss of older people. Mm-hmm. This is something that isn't necessarily reversible unless other causes are found, and this is what ends up being treated with hearing aids, the technology for which has come on leaps and bounds in the last few years, and so that can often be a really helpful treatment. There are several other very common reasons for hear loss as well. So if you've got lots of wax buildup in one or both of your ears, that causes a conductive hearing loss, so that the sound waves can't actually get through to your eardrums to transmit the noise to your brain. Also, sometimes you can get infections or fluid accumulating in the middle ear, and that can affect how those sound waves are transmitted to the hearing apparatus. Infections and fluid behind the eardrum can lead to perforations of the eardrums, which again can impact how those sound waves are transmitted. And there's a condition called Meniere's disease, which is pretty poorly understood, actually, but is thought to be an immune or inflammatory condition affecting the middle ear that can lead to hearing loss in association with dizziness and ringing in the ears. So certainly if you experience that triad of symptoms, it's worthwhile getting that looked at and having the appropriate investigations.
Yeah, because Meniere's is a really nasty condition, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly can be, yes.
Okay, so if we think that our hearing is not as good as it should be, and people keep telling us, you know, keep saying pardon to us, or experiencing tinnitus, because I think that's one of the conditions that can often indicate that there's a hearing problem, what should we do?
I'd say, first of all, try and make an appointment with a healthcare professional in order to have your ears examined and your hearing coarsely tested. So we would need to look inside the ear canals with an otoscope to make sure that there isn't any obstruction and to make sure the eardrums are looking normal. there's a condition called otosclerosis, which where you get bony overgrowths of the eardrum, and another called cholesteatoma, where you get a build-up of the skin cells that overlie the eardrum. And they can both be seen on examination, and if they're the case, you'd need to be referred to a specialist.
So could it, just interesting, could a GP pick those up, or would you have to have already been referred to an ENT specialist?
In some cases, a GP can pick that up. If it's a subtle change, then you may end up needing to see a specialist in order to have that diagnosed. And certainly if there's any obstruction in the ear canal, actually sometimes you may need referral in order to remove whatever it is that's in the way so you can get a clear image of the ear. And with that in mind, you know, if you can't get access to your GP very easily, then there are other healthcare professionals you could see. So either practice nurse who can have a look and irrigate if there's lots of wax there. Well, there's lots of private hearing clinics that you could attend and see an audiologist who might be able to examine your ears. And if there's wax there, for example, they can use something called microsuction to remove the wax, which then allows the clinicians to see the eardrums in a lot better detail.
And can be a lot of relief sometimes for the patient as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't count the number of people who've come to see me with hearing loss and I've looked in their ears and they've just been completely bunged up with wax. The wax comes out and they can hear again.
They can hear again. Wonderful. Yeah, it's a whole new world. Now, just before we go on to talk about eyesight, I think it is worth mentioning that there are some hearing loss situations which can require immediate attention. I mean, what would those be?
So I think anybody who has a sudden onset hearing loss, either both sides or one side, needs to be seen urgently in order to determine why that is the case. Sometimes a hearing loss can occur as a result of a problem with the blood supply to the inner ear. So, for example, in a stroke or a mini stroke, a TIA, or if there is a growth within the middle ear or around the ear apparatus that is impacting the transmission of those sounds along the nerve fibres. And so I would say that if you've got one-sided hearing loss or sudden onset hearing loss, it most certainly would be sensible to have yourself checked out. And an audiogram, so a hearing test, will also help to determine whether this is likely to be a worrying problem or whether it's something that's likely to be age-related or simple.
Okay, so definitely go to your GP and get it checked out. So moving on to eyesight, what are some of the common problems that we are likely to encounter as we get older?
So many, unfortunately. So our eyes are incredible. The job that they do and the way that they do it is just amazing. It's a mystery, really. Again, in the same way as hearing, actually, as we get older, the eyes get older. The structures that make up the eye and that allow us to see change over time. And that can give rise to something called refractive errors. So if you're long-sighted or short-sighted, the lens changes a little bit and that will change how able to see at long distance and short distance you are. And that condition is called presbyopia, so similar in name. And that's something that can be age-related and why you often will need reading glasses as you get older. Another condition that's important to consider is cataracts. So if you find that you're noticing a lot of glare in your vision, or if you notice any blurring or, you know, lack of clarity in your vision, it may be that you're developing some cataracts within the eye. These are fairly easily treated with an operation, and, you know, it can have a significant improvement on things once the cataracts are removed. If you are worried about that, you can access advice through your optician, or you can go and see your GP and they can examine you. And normally cataract surgery is something that the ophthalmologist would need to do, and I know for the NHS there's lots of criteria in order to have the operations done, so, you know, it's something that's worthwhile discussing with your specialist, certainly.
So that's in that instance, I think that's the surgery involves replacing the lens.
Yeah, so basically opening up the cavity within which your lens lives and putting a new one in, and a nice clear one that you can see through rather than a cloudy one,
which is great. Now there's another nasty condition, which I think normally when you go and have an eye test, I think they do tests for this, and that's glaucoma.
Yes, so glaucoma is where you've got increased pressure within the globe of the eye, within the orbit of the eye. And this can, you know, it can cause either a gradual change in your vision or in more worrying situations, in acute glaucoma, which is an emergency, it can cause a sudden change in the pressure of the eye, which leads to visual disturbance in addition to pain. And if you experience a one or both-sided set of pain in addition to loss of vision, then it's important that you get yourself off to an eye casualty as soon as possible to make sure your pressures are checked and that there isn't anything that needs doing from that perspective. On the flip side, you can develop chronic changes or increases in the pressure within your eye, and this can often lead to a tunnelling of vision, so where you sort of lose your peripheral vision, and it's because the pressure of the optic nerve at the back of the eye causes this tunnelling effect to occur. So if you've noticed any of that at all in one or both of your eyes, again, either go and see your optician for a routine pressure check or go and see your GP for referral onwards to the specialists.
Now, another condition which can arise, I think probably not that common, but sometimes, and I've certainly had this actually, that's why I wanted to mention it, that you can get kind of like bright lights in the corner of your eye, particularly when you're in a dark room, or you can sometimes see sort of tiny little spots in your vision. That can be a sign of something that can develop into something quite serious, I think.
Yes, are you talking about macular degeneration?
Yes, and also I think the retina detachment.
Yes. So I'll deal with them slightly separately, if that's okay. So the macula is the part of the retina that is responsible for, well, it's got the highest concentration of visual cells on it, and it's responsible for our central vision. And so often, as we get older, there are some age-related changes in that macular area of the retina that can then lead to loss of your central visual field. Mm-hmm. If that happens, then it is something that needs looking at quite promptly. One of the symptoms you might experience actually before loss of that central part of your vision is that you get distortion of lines. So if you're looking at a wall or if you're looking at the lines on a road, they might look bendy instead of straight. And that is another reason for going and seeing somebody, I think probably quite urgently, within a week to see a specialist, ideally. The other symptom you mentioned, sort of the flashes or the lights, that can occur at any area of your visual field, and that can often be a result of the retina actually peeling off the back surface of the eye in something called a retinal detachment. That is an ocular emergency, and so if you experience those symptoms, even if they feel mild and not particularly disruptive, it's absolutely critical that you get that looked at ASAP, because there is a real risk, if there's a little bit of the retina detaching, there's a risk that the whole thing will detach and you will lose the eyesight, because it's very difficult to get the retina to reattach if it's too late.
Yeah, so that's very, very good, important advice. Now, is there anything that we can do to generally protect our eyes and keep them healthy for longer, or they're just going to deteriorate irrespective just because of our age?
There will be, you know, an element of it that is a time issue, I think. I think that there are also lots of things you can do proactively to try and improve or sort of slow down any progressive visual loss. We talked previously about diabetes and blood pressure, and actually there are two conditions that can often predispose to problems with vision. So if you're hypertensive or you've got diabetes, it changes the blood vessels at the back of the eye, and that can impact your vision. So making sure that you're living well, that you're getting regular health checkups, you're making sure your blood pressure is well controlled, and if you've got diabetes, making sure you've got really tight diabetic control will minimise the impact of those conditions on your eyes. Likewise, the retina is very precious, and like I said, if it gets damaged, it can be damaged permanently. So having a diet that's rich in lots of nutrients and vitamins is really important, but vitamin A is particularly important for vision. So making sure that you're getting a healthy diet that's rich in, you know, nutrients and vitamins and things is also very helpful and can sometimes help. The other thing I would say, in bright sunlight, try not to ever look directly at the sun. And if you are in places where it's very bright, so if you're on a white sandy beach or in the Alps or in the snow, make sure that you're wearing glasses to protect from the glare, because that can actually really damage your eyes.
That's really great, important advice. Thank you very much, Dr. Barton.
You're welcome.
And coming up next, Kobe Sheltiel of Marshallswick Vets will be talking to me about the types of dogs and cats that most suit our age and lifestyle. So stay tuned to 92.6 FM Radio Verulam. We are known all over the world as a nation of dog lovers, and of all animals, in fact. But keeping a pet of any kind is a huge responsibility, and we really do need to think very carefully about the kind of animals, particularly dogs, that best suit our physical capability and our home surroundings. For instance, I have the most adorable boxer girl, who in the house is actually a huge soppy lap dog, but I'm already finding it difficult to take her on walks these days because she's so strong and needs a lot of exercise. So I went along to Marshallswick Vet to get some advice from head vet Kobe Sheltiel. And welcome to the show, Kobe.
Welcome, nice to be here.
Now, here in St Albans, we all love our pets, whether they be dogs, cats, rabbits, horses. But as we get older, it's important that we have a pet, particularly if it's a dog, that we can cope with in terms of exercise and maybe, you know, the type of accommodation we're living in. So what are some of the main considerations we should really take note of before we get particularly a dog or even a cat?
Right, so I guess the good thing about having so many breeds of dogs around is that we can find the perfect dog for any person, really, whether they are very active or suffer from any medical conditions which restrict them to home. There are some dogs for everybody. But I guess people need to know their limitation and what they expect for when they actually get in dogs. And I guess one of the first things will be the size of the dog that you want to get, because obviously you can get a larger one and smaller ones. Depends whether you've got any medical issues that will affect that. In most cases, elderly persons will prefer to have smaller dogs, which wouldn't pull too much and would be easy to handle. So size is obviously a major consideration. How active you are, if you are, loads of elderly persons are not necessarily restricted. There are some which are very active, so they may choose to go with some, more of a larger dog or a little bit more of a powerful dog. The nature of the dog is obviously very important. You can get small dogs which are very noisy or harder to train. So it depends on how much you into growing the dog and be able to train him and so on may affect the choice that you try to get. And the age of the dog is a major factor, because getting a puppy has really great advantages. You get a nice little dog which you can actually train and mold the way you like it to be. On the other hand, it may mean sleepless nights, loads of...
A bit like having babies, children.
Well, exactly the same. So, yeah, all those sleepless nights and puppy training, which involve, weaning in the house and sometimes have any other accidents. Sometimes they don't grow exactly the way you want them to be. Sometimes they train you, really. So some people will be up to it and some others not. And luckily there are so many options to adopt dogs these days. That can be a great solution for somebody.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think if you, instead of having a puppy, if you go to maybe a dog rescue centre, you can pick a dog. And you'll already, first of all, it will already have been house trained, but you'll also have a good idea what its temperament is.
Yeah, in most cases you do. Obviously, charity is trying to be transparent about the nature of the dog when you about to get one, so you will get the information. You will know if you had any bad experience or what's its temper. Obviously, in some cases you will get surprises, but you get a little bit less. If you obviously adopt one.
Now, one thing we mustn't forget about is, well, the cost, because dogs and cats and any pet for that matter can be quite expensive, and dogs particularly, obviously, they food is expensive. And also, talking to you as a vet, I mean, you know, if the dog or the cat or animal becomes unwell, then you've got to cope with the possibly, you know, quite high vet bills.
Yeah, of course. You probably need to divide it to different type of expenses that you will have when you get a dog. The first one is obviously the purchasing price, and if you get it from charity, you may not pay a lot. If you want to go for a purebred from a posh area, you may pay £1,000 for that. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the maintenance and preventative care, which you can find out that it's reasonably okay, but I guess for larger breeds it's obviously going to cost much more. Most practices, us included, are doing pet health plans, which basically helps you to spread the payment for your dog over the course of the year. And obviously there are the unexpected expenses in case that your dog is getting injured, which can be quite high, obviously. Luckily, there are so many insurance companies in the market which will insure nearly every dog, and that definitely helps to prevent those surprises and be able to cope with them in the best way if your dog is needing in need of any treatment.
And obviously, our lifestyle has a part to play in this too, doesn't it? Because apart from the fact it depends whether you live in a house with a big garden or a flat, but also whether you're at home, to be at home with your dog, because some dogs really don't like to be left alone all day. So, I mean, if you're still working, that can be a problem, can't it?
Oh, certainly, not just for elderly person, but for anybody. Your lifestyle should really determine what kind of dog you want to get. If a person is not at home most of the day, it's not a good idea for him to take a dog which requires lots of attention. On the other hand, you've got some breeds which will be okay to stay by themselves for long hours. Anyway, we don't recommend to leave a dog for too long. There are dog walkers and daycares that can be used for that. But that's a major consideration when you choose which breed to get, or if to get a dog at all. Maybe you should get a cat.
Yeah. Well, cats are a lot easier, aren't they? Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know if I'm right, but I've always been told that dogs, that the bigger the dog, the shorter the lifespan. You know, the small dogs tend to live longer. I'm just thinking now, you know, we have to think about if, say, we're, I don't know, maybe early 60s, it'd be fine to buy a real bouncy dog like a boxer, but then you have to think, well, you know, what am I going to be like, you know, in my 70s? So that the age of the, you know, the lifespan of the dog can also be quite an important factor when you just choose which breed to get.
Certainly. In general, as you said, large dog live shorter, unfortunately, with the largest one live less than 10 years. And the smallest one can reach up to 17, 18 years old. I guess rehoming is not always a big deal. So in case that the dog needs to be rehomed, there are so many charities and other organizations which can help with that. But nobody wants just to let his dog go. So it's definitely something that you need to consider.
Okay, so just say where somebody lives in a flat or in a house with a small garden. I mean, are there any particular breeds of dogs, or say small dogs, that are particularly suitable for living or spending most of their time, say, in a flat?
So I guess it depends on your lifestyle. If you are a person who lives in a flat and looking for a dog which will be more of a lap dog, you probably want to go with one of the smaller breeds. Examples will be Shih Tzu, for instance.
Yes.
Quite a nice, very lovely, has a great temper, will sit next to you on the sofa for hours, probably wouldn't bark too much, and can be the perfect companion. Some other dogs can be poodles, for instance. They're very smart, they're relatively easy to train, they don't shed, so if somebody suffers from allergies, that can be the perfect dog for him. They've got in all sorts of sizes. You can get a toy, you can get the miniature, you can get the standard, so they can fit nearly every person. Other dogs will be, for instance, pugs. Pugs are very lively, very playful, very happy, will always welcome you. They don't need a lot of exercise, which may be, which is probably because of their downside, that they are belong to a breed which is called brachiocephalic breed. So they tend to have quite a lot of breathing issues. So it's a very popular dog, but for us vets, it's a bit of a controversial one, just because we see a lot of them coming with breathing issue. But their temper is amazing.
Yes, I mean, that's a bit like my dog, which is who's a beautiful boxer girl. Mm-hmm. But it's a similar kind of problem because the face, the nose is slightly squashed, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, so their nose is a bit squashed, and it's not just the nose, it's all the breathing components are not designed in a proper way because of obviously loads of inbreeding, and that's the way they've been designed. As a result, they find it very difficult to breathe, and sometimes they can have serious breathing issues. So there are some procedures which are designed to help and ease the stress on the breathing system, but in general, they do have more problems when it comes to breathing.
Okay, now it's important not to forget the cat lovers who may be listening. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, are there any particular types of cats that are more suitable for older people to look after?
Cats are a bit more tricky. Most of them will be independent cats anyway. So they can be the perfect companion because they don't require a lot of attention. Some of them will love it, but in most cases they get their own space, and they don't really need a lot of attention. They are much cheaper to run, obviously, and some person will find out that long hair cats will be a bit more challenging to maintain because they require brushing on a regular basis. The short hair are a little bit easier in that respect. There are so many stray cats and cats which needs rehomed. There are loads of charities around us. We work with the two local ones, Cat Protection and Hearts and Paws, which we'll be happy to, to provide with cats. They are very lovely, and loads of people will love growing them instead of dogs.
Well, thanks ever so much, Kobe. I mean, I think we did mention this a little bit earlier, but all cats and dogs, maybe particularly dogs, are useful because it encourages us to go out and take exercise, which is important. And dogs and cats both have a really therapeutic effect, don't they, on all people, but maybe particularly on old people if they're living alone.
Certainly, definitely. Cats and dogs are good for your body, good for your soul. Having a dog means that he needs to go out. It means they don't need to go out, so somebody needs to take him. That's probably going to be you. It does keep people active. There are loads of researches and studies which have been done on the interactions between dogs and humans. And apparently there are what we call happy hormones, which can be secreted when you've got a dog. Those are hormones which makes you feel better, make you feel more positive, less depressed. Plus, it's a great companion. So sometimes we're lonely. Dogs can be your best friend, really.
Yeah. Well, that's some really great advice there, Kobe. Thanks ever so much for talking today. And just the one message that we all know so well, of course, is that remember that a dog or a cat, or any pet for that matter, is for life. Not just for Christmas.
Not at all, and that's a very good point. You get a dog, you get a cat, you've got a commitment. It's your responsibility to take care of them, to feed them, to make sure that they grow and treated well. And it's a great responsibility, obviously.
Well, thanks once again, Kobe. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming here.
Well, once again, we've run out of time, but I'd like to thank my guests for being on the show today and for giving us some great information and advice. And I'll be back again at the same time next week to talk to local experts on how we baby boomers can enjoy our later years to the full. And remember, as always, you're never too old. Bye for now.